Israel.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, very nice to hear you back again on the air. I wish you well. I'm happy to hear your voice has recovered a little. And it's good to have you back, Howard.
Yeah, it's really good to be back, I must say. It was a difficult few days. I'm not 100%, but I'm certainly a lot better. As I said a little bit earlier, and I said to you offline, I'm so grateful for both Omicron and that this is Omicron and not the prior variant. And also because I've had the vaccine makes really the world of difference.
That evidence is really borne out by everything that we see here. We're not planning to talk much about Corona today, even though it very much dominates Israel and the headlines. But one of the things that I've said before, and I'll say again, because the evidence is just clear wherever you look, is that those people who are seriously ill, those people who are on ECMO machines, those people being ventilated, are almost exclusively people who have not been vaccinated. So everybody can take that wherever they wish to take it to, but that is just a simple fact that we find here locally.
Right, and certainly it's borne out through most parts of the world. Let's talk about the Israel stories. Two IDF officers were killed in a friendly fire incident last night. What is known about this?
Yeah, very, very sad and tragic incident, and it's very sad for me to have to be talking about it this morning. Just hot off the press, literally, and not a lot of information available quite yet, including not the names of the two officers who were killed. We understand their families have been advised, but their names have not been released for publication quite yet. What we hear and what we know is that the Egoz unit, which is one of the IDF's elite combat units, was involved in a training exercise in southern Israel in the area just north of the Dead Sea last night. And we understand that training exercise went smoothly. There was no issue with the exercise itself. It was conducted in an area which is very, very commonly used for exercises like this. We understand then that after the exercise, there were two military officers who were walking around the area when they spotted what is considered to have been a suspicious figure who was walking around nearby. And we understand that they then attempted to try to arrest this individual, first calling for the person to halt, and then they fired their weapons into the air. Apparently, this act of firing their weapons into the air attracted the attention of other soldiers in the near vicinity who had no idea what was going on, but simply saw the weapon being fired. They then understood, or thought that they understood, that they were actually being fired upon themselves, and so returned fire in that direction. Unfortunately killing the two officers in the process. So that is the story as we understand it, which is a very, very sad story indeed. And I'm guessing that we will hear a little bit more about that during the course of today. So far, the military center has banned any publication of details of the individuals, any more information other than that. And of course, unfortunately, it comes hot on the heels only a week after those two Israeli Air Force pilots were killed in the helicopter crash off the Sea of Haifa. That's also still the subject of a military investigation as to exactly why the flotation device that the helicopter is armed with actually didn't operate when it was supposed to. So unfortunately, two difficult weeks in the IDF in terms of casualties that they've had to suffer.
Yeah, this story is also a very, very strange one. When I started seeing news about it, that the Shin Bet has arrested a number of Jewish Israelis who were accused of spying for Iran. Now, this is something that actually took my breath away. I didn't think that this was something that would happen.
Well, especially when you consider the fact that the individuals concerned, the five people who have been arrested, are actually former Iranians themselves, or have quite close links with families who came from Iran, Jewish families who came from Iran. And we understand that a certain operative, an Iranian operative, went about hooking up, creating relations with Jewish Israelis, former Iranians, and in the process, managed to get these people to do various things which would be considered to be slightly unkosher in terms of providing information about secret locations, in terms of trying to convince these people to get their children to sign up to certain units within the IDF. And so there are a few stories of these people, some of whom it seems actually really knew that this was a person who was trying to extract secret information from them and yet still cooperated with him. Now, I find this all very, very strange indeed, particularly because as far as I had understood until now, the Iranian Jewish community is very much Zionistic, is very much pro-Israel, is very conscious of the desire by the Iranian regime to destroy the state of Israel, even though the Iranian regime says they have nothing against Jews. Jews are okay. They even support the Jews who live in Iran. Their only issue is Israel, which you can all draw your own conclusions about.
And just a little bit of Holocaust denial, which has...
Just a little. Just a little Holocaust denial, agreed. But the point is that it's very, very odd. This whole story is very odd. Four women and one man, apparently, have been arrested. Some of the stories that have been told really kind of go way beyond what you would even think is logical. Apparently, two of the suspects actually attempted to convince their sons to join military intelligence units when they were drafted into the IDF at the behest of this Iranian operative. He was the one who was trying to convince them to get their kids to join a military intelligence unit. He was the one who asked them to send certain photographs, including a picture of the U.S. embassy in Tel Aviv, including a request for the email address of the prime minister, including telephone numbers of certain government officials. And in fact, one woman even befriended a member of Knesset at the behest of this particular individual to try and extract information from them. But fortunately, what the Shin Bet have said is that ultimately the information that was sent to this individual doesn't seem to be super sensitive. The individuals concerned did not really have access to information which could have been considered to be too sensitive. And so the Shin Bet really nipped this in the bud at a very, very early stage. These individuals have now been arrested. They've been accused of passing information on to, spies, enemies of Israel. And so it's just a very, very odd story. But it does show that, you know, the Shin Bet are working everywhere. Apparently, even money changed hands. Some of these people received money in exchange for this information that they were asked to provide. So, you know, it really goes beyond what anybody could consider to be innocent in terms of, you know, befriending somebody and passing information. It seems to be quite clear that they really knew that this individual was passing this information or requesting it, at least, on behalf of the Iranian regime. So good that the Shin Bet have cut this one right down. And just, you know, you can't be too careful, can you?
Yeah. The part about the story for me that's also strange is one would have thought that this is a story we would never hear about, and that misinformation, once they were identified, maybe misinformation being passed back to Iran instead, but very clearly they wouldn't cooperate. What I understand, what I would read into this is that they wouldn't cooperate in that way, and therefore they went quite public with the story and arrested them.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons at least why they've gone so public with the story right now is to try to warn other people that, you know, the general public out there, I mean, at least some of this activity seems to have been done in innocence. Not all of it was being done with the knowledge of the fact that information was being passed to Iran. And I think that that's the bit that has concerned the Israeli regime and therefore it convinced them to go public with this. And in fact, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has made a statement saying that Israelis need to be very, very careful. We need to be aware of the fact that there are people like this roaming around, probably online, probably social media. I'm guessing where the contacts were made initially. But the Prime Minister's warned Israelis to be vigilant, to be careful, about sending information which considered to be beyond what would normally be a friendly kind of interaction. I think that the idea is really just to warn the general public out there.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a strange story in my view, and I wonder if we'll hear more about it. I certainly hope that we do. The other story that I wanted to discuss with you, it was that attempts to plant trees in southern Israel has resulted in violence and damage to property. How is this even possible?
And not for the first time. So there was a crisis that took place earlier this week, which is not the first time that we've had protesters and stones being hurled and roads being blocked and vehicles being torched and railway lines even being disrupted in the Negev area. And this comes as a result of the Jewish National Fund, the JNF. We all know and love the JNF for the work that they've done in planting trees in Israel and trying to make the desert bloom again. So the JNF has been active in trying to plant trees near to a Bedouin village in the Negev. And apparently this violence has erupted as a result of an accusation that these trees are being planted on private land, land that is apparently owned as claimed by a Bedouin tribe. And in fact, there have been even protests, there have been appeals to court, apparently, prosecution memos that have been filed in order to try to stop the tree planting exercise, because this is considered by the Bedouin tribe, the local Bedouin tribe, to be an attempt at a land grab. And this sounds all very, very strange. I don't know how planting trees might be considered to be a land grab. I mean, I can get the fact that you wouldn't want the JNF or anybody coming onto private land. But once again, in Israel, we've got this whole issue of property and what is private property and what is considered to be more public property. Land in general is at a premium in Israel. There is not much of it. There are so many different laws that have applied to land registry over the centuries in Israel that it becomes very, very difficult to work out which land registry regime we're actually abiding by. Lots of different people claiming land under different regimes that might have been involved here over the centuries. And I suspect that this might be one of those stories. So as a result of the JNF trying to go in and use money donated by people, including potentially some of the listeners out there who might have donated money to the JNF through the Blue Box campaigns or whatever it's been, the JNF going out and trying to do good by planting trees. I mean, this is not an attempt to grab land in order to develop it, in order to try to make money out of it or anything like that. This is just simply planting trees. These tree planting activities have resulted in this violence, which is very, very odd indeed and very unfortunate, because I think it's all done in the best possible, with the best possible intentions. And yet it has really resulted in some quite serious things. We understand that even a couple of years ago, there was an order to stop the planting of trees near the Yatir forest, because again, there were some claims about this being private land. So I don't really know how this is all going to be resolved. On the one hand, this land currently lies fallow. It has no use really. It has no value to anybody at the moment. The JNF has decided that planting trees there would be a good idea. Unfortunately, right. This resulted in this mass violence. So I'm not really sure where all of this goes, right. And who will be called upon to adjudicate upon who this land really belongs to. I mean, I guess it'll go to a court somewhere, but even the courts
don't
necessarily.
It's incredible. Absolutely everything is so charged in Israel that something so simple could become so complex.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, it doesn't even stop there. I mean, it goes to almost every aspect of Israeli life, unfortunately, where, you know, people are having to put their elbows out in order to try to assert their themselves and assert their claims to land.
Yeah.
And with the scarcity of land here, it becomes a very major issue indeed.
Anthony, before I let you go, Karen M. asking about Israel back to COVID. Is Israel looking at some point to change the approach? It does seem that with so many tens of thousands of new cases a day, easing of restrictions. Is Israel changing directions completely?
I don't know about changing direction completely. I think that Israel some time ago already decided that keeping the economy opening was open was the primary objective, not to put people at home, not to try and affect their ability to make a living, but at the same time to maintain public health. And the maintenance of public health has been through the vaccine program. Get vaccinated and then get out and work. That is the plan. So I don't think that that has changed substantially. I mean, I think there was an attempt at some point to try to keep Omicron away from Israel. That has clearly failed, or maybe it hasn't failed. Maybe the delay was enough just to give the medical facilities and everybody else the opportunity to gear up for what was coming next. It's really arrived. As I said to Kathy yesterday, it's being described as a tsunami rather than a wave this time around. So many people being infected. But thankfully, the number of serious cases relatively limited, and those people who do become seriously ill seem to recover quite quickly. A relatively limited number of people in hospital, relatively limited number of people needing ventilation. The numbers have increased undoubtedly, but we seem to be coping. The biggest challenge right now is the medical staff who have contracted corona and who are being forced to stay at home rather than come to work. That seems to be the biggest challenge to our system right now, just to get those people through their isolation period and back to work so that we don't have this shortage of staff in the medical wards. But the rest, I think we kind of are really doing okay. A lot of people out there in isolation having contracted corona like yourself, but still carrying on. You know, the economy is moving. So I don't think that we can consider this to be a substantial change in policy.
Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It is 8:01. I do apologize. Your news is a slightly late. We'll of course catch you on a Monday, wishing you everything of the best.